This is the Making Good Podcast, episode 33. Welcome to the Making Good Podcast with me, Jen Gale. Stay tuned for inspirational stories from ethical and social entrepreneurs and people making good stuff happen in their communities, as well as tips, tools, and techniques to help you grow your ethical business and amplify your impact. Hello, hello. Welcome to the Making Good Podcast. I'm Jen and I'm your host, and I really can't wait to share today's interview with you. I'm lucky enough to live just about 15 minutes away from one of the most innovative social enterprise projects in the country, which is called Edventure. Now, Edventure is a school for community enterprise. It's based in Frome in Somerset, and it links education, community and enterprise together to create this fabulous win-win-win scenario. And they have two cohorts of students each year who participate in a 10-week programme that not only gives them the skills that they need to start their own community or social enterprises, but it also creates a community enterprise in Frome. So they've been responsible for some amazing projects like the UK's first ever share shop or Library of Things and the UK's first ever community fridge. And both of those have actually had a huge influence, not only on the local community, but on community enterprise within the whole of the UK. And as you'll hear, there's now Hubbub, a project in London, are taking on the community fridge enterprise and sort of want to create 50 community fridges around the UK. So from this one community fridge in Frome that Edventure set up, big things are happening. So in today's interview, I get the chance to speak to Johannes, who is the man behind Edventure and whose ideas and passions really are making a difference. Early on in the conversation, he utters this phrase that has really stuck with me ever since. He speaks about wanting to create a livelihood that matters. And that totally resonated with me, and I suspect it will probably resonate with you too. For me, that's kind of what it all boils down to. If I can create a livelihood that matters, and I can help others to do the same, then wow, that's awesome. We recorded this interview over the summer, so where Johannesson refers to enrolments for the latest Edventure course, it's actually just started, so the enrolments are unfortunately closed. But if you're interested in hearing about any future courses, they're open to anyone aged 18 to 35, then do visit the Edventure website, which I'll link to in the show notes, to find out how you can be the first to hear when the next course opens up. I really hope you enjoy listening to this episode half as much, even half as much, as I enjoyed recording it. Enjoy. Hi, Johannes. Welcome to the show.
Hi there.
It's great to have you here. I was just saying to you before we hit record that I'm really excited to dive into finding out more about Edventure and what you guys are doing there. So can you start off by introducing yourself and telling us a little bit about Edventure?
Yeah, sure. There are many ways I could do that introduction, but really to join it up with what Edventure is about. I think for me, what I've been searching for is to create a livelihood that matters to me. And what matters to me is not just, you know, to me personally, but also for the wider world. And I've been really pursuing that as a, you know, as a career and a livelihood, to search for that way of making a living in a way that I feel I can live how I want to live and also make a contribution to the world around me and make a difference. And very early on, I found that there are lots of people asking that exact question.
Yes.
You know, young people who finish university and are then asking, you know, how do I want to live my life? You know, people who've straight after school or have been dropped out, have dropped out and then straight into a career. And then after a few years asking, you know, like, what am I doing with my life? And so that journey is shared that I've been on and so many other people are on as well. And that's really what my intention is for Edventure, that it enables young adults to pursue and search for, take a step towards a livelihood that matters to them.
Yeah.
And in doing so, to create the kind of world that we'd love to live in. So, you know, how adventure works is that win-win scenario where we give people that opportunity to take on leadership, to build skills, to build networks, work in a team, gain those skills to set up a social enterprise, so that they are equipped on that journey towards a livelihood that matters to them. Yeah. And through doing so, we have an impact on our local community that is really tangible. I think there's so many things in the world that are not tangible, uh-huh. and people are craving for something that is practical mm-hmm. and tangible. You know, our community fridge, you know, each month it saves now 5,000, 6,000 items of food that would have gone into the bin wow. otherwise. And the share shop is there for people to borrow items. If you've got a community venue, you know, things you can see,
yeah.
things you can make with your hands. Yeah, that's really at the heart of it, that win-win scenario, enabling young people and to build practically the world that we like to live in, hands-on in our yeah. local community.
And so what were you doing before Adventure?
I was working with a charity and social enterprise in Devon mm-hmm. For quite a long time. That was one aspect of my work. And I developed courses and facilitated courses at Embercombe. Mm-hmm. I initiated the Catalyst course there, the Embercombe apprenticeship. So educational offerings, really. And then the other side of my work was just being a freelance facilitator and trainer in leadership development. So I work with a really interesting organization, or have been now for the past 5 years, called On Purpose, in London, Paris, and Berlin. They're based, which is a year-long program for high-flying professionals that want to change into working in social enterprise in the mm-hmm. charity sector. A year-long program. I've delivered a module on that. So that's part of my freelance work, and yeah. Embercombe was my main kind of work.
And you don't have a West Country accent. Where are you originally from?
Well spotted. I'm originally from Germany.
Okay.
And have been living here for the past 12 years.
Okey-dokes.
Roughly in Wales, in Devon, London, various places. But in Frome now for, 5.5 years now.
And is that how long Adventure's been going?
Yeah, pretty much. So I moved to Frome for Adventure. So when I was living in London, and that's when I gathered a small troop of people to work on that idea of Adventure. Uh-huh. And then we were looking at places to start up. And one thing was very clear, that we didn't want to start up in London. And then Bristol was on the map for a while, but we actually thought that actually the model would be best suited for smaller places, small uh-huh. towns, because there's a lot of social enterprise work in cities. A lot of opportunities for young people to train, to have, you know, to get involved with interesting organizations and all of that. And in towns, there's actually very little there.
Yeah.
Which is interesting, because I also believe that towns provide a great opportunity for young adults in social enterprise in general, really. Just because there's a strong community, first of all, stronger than in cities often, mm-hmm. Which means that, you know, that social enterprise and community enterprises can thrive more likely. You know, community, I think, is a very important aspect of social enterprise.
Yeah.
And then living is cheaper. You know, particularly for young adults, that makes a big difference. When you're starting up a social enterprise or an initiative or even self-employment, keeping your overheads low is one of the most important things.
Yes.
In a way.
Yeah.
When you don't have much money coming in.
And why did you pick Frome specifically?
So we had then a list of criteria that the place needed to meet. And there were, you know, sort of to boil it down, there were two main ones. We wanted a town that had a social need, mm-hmm. but also a strong community, mm-hmm. and bring those together. And then another one was we were looking for empty property. So we wanted to find spaces, towns that had plenty of, you know, unused commercial space that we could utilize, basically. That was another one.
And over recent years, Froome has transitioned, really, hasn't it, from being quite a typical sort of older market town with, as you say, lots of empty shops and things. And it's become this very vibrant place with lots of independent shops and this amazing independent market they have once a month, and this mm-hmm. real sense of community that you've referred to. I'm intrigued as to how much was already there before Adventure started, or how much Adventure itself and the enterprises that you've incubated have influenced that.
So you know, in no ways do I want to take credit for the
the rise of Froome.
Yeah, exactly. But those things all go hand in hand, you know. I think before I go into the reasons why I think Froome is thriving, I also just want to say that Froome isn't thriving completely for everyone. Mm-hmm. You know, Froome is thriving for some people, and it has attracted a lot of wealth, which also contributed to small independent shops and cafes and, you know, all of that kind of lovely lifestyle that can flourish when people have money. But for, you know, at the same time, the in the last 5 years, the indexes of deprivation also worsened. So actually, there's more poverty in Froome than has been 5 years ago. So, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, visibly Froome is thriving. And there are lots of people that are still struggling. Anyway, so that aside, compared to other market towns similar size, there's an awful lot going on, and Froome is thriving, and there are many good initiatives. And yeah, so I think, yeah, so a few reasons why Froome is thriving. I think there have been always a very, there's been a big civil community. You know, when you, the amount of groups and societies and things, that was a really big influencer on how Froome is, because, you know, with little money, people make a lot happen. So that strong community was there. I think it probably originated from there being quite, like quite a few artisans moving into the town, artists, creatives. And at the same time, Froome has always been a proud kind of independent business community with the Froome Carnival and like very traditional kind of groups and societies that have existed for a very long time. Then certainly the Froome Town Council had a contribution to play, you know, being very active, encouraging a lot of good things, a lot of good people to come into the town. It was actually a couple of town councillors that, in a way, you know, convinced us to come to Froome because it would be a good place for us to flourish. So yeah, I think the people that were really active have attracted a lot of good people. And you know, then the Steiner School starting up, attracting a lot of new people moving into the town, which then has the effect of house prices and you know, well, it's not just the Steiner School. Obviously, there are many aspects that have drawn people to live in Froome. So you know, I can't really separate that. I think we've had some. We've added to the attractiveness of the town. So when people come from abroad to make a film about Froome and independent politics or whatever, they usually stop by the town council, then the share shop, the fridge, Adventure, which is us, and then the old church school, which is Gavin Eddy's workspace, and he's an investor and also contributed quite a lot. So in that sense, I think we are used as a kind of show, you know, part of showing off what Froome can do.
Definitely. And Edventure's model, if you like, is that you run courses, don't you, for young people, and the whole idea is that at the end of that course they will have started up a social enterprise. So the share shop and the community fridge are projects that came off the back of these courses, aren't they?
Yeah, that's right. So we've got this 10-week course that is then followed by 6 months of startup support for the students who are on the course. And I think the difference is we are not just taking a group of people and then say, you know, you've got that, you know, 10 weeks to start up a social enterprise, which, you know, quite a few organizations do.
Right.
But what we do is that we actually prepare the ground for that a little bit and to link up with the town and what is needed in the town and local organizations and and then gather a team of people that start up something that we want to happen already and has some leadership and some kind of partnerships behind it already. You know, or we give them a resource like, you know, an empty industrial space, which, you know, has become our work hub, or an empty shop, which is our shop now, the share shop. So and that, I think that makes a difference that we, you know, not just say like to start up any social enterprise, but like, look, there's here's a project for you to get your teeth in. And that means we can actually achieve quite a lot in a short amount of time, because they don't have to spend, you know, 4 or 5 weeks to sort, you know, figure out what they're doing anyway. And we can make it, make sure that it really meets the needs of the people here in Froome.
Definitely. And we've mentioned the share shop and the community fridge a couple of times already. Can you tell us a little bit more about the share shop to start with, and how that works?
Okay, yeah. So the share is a library of things. So it's like a library, and people can, but people can borrow all sorts of stuff. So beginning from, you know, camping equipment to tools to, you know, drills, little circular saws, you know, things like spanners, simple things. Then, you know, like household items, projectors, cooking equipment, all sorts, really. What's really unique is that all those items have been donated by people in the local community, and people can borrow it through by giving a donation. So, and it you know, it does much more than just giving people access to stuff. It is, it's an opportunity for people to build community, to meet people, to appreciate things that are donated by other things. So one thing is that the, all items, especially in the beginning, had like a little sign on, little story of the person who donated that item. And the idea is that with that we can, you know, people have to buy things, consume less, can share more. That's it. That's the whole idea of the share shop,
Definitely. And the community fridge, can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so that was the first community fridge in the UK. In essence, it's a large fridge sent in the center of town, and people can, people and businesses can put food in there that they don't need, that's still good to eat and meets a set of criteria, and other people then can just go and take it, really. And it's public, there's no, you know, we're in, anyone can give and everyone can take. And we've got supermarkets on board, like Marks and Spencer's, Lidl's, now Greg's, that, put in regular food, and then individuals also do that. Brilliant. So when people go on holiday and they still got, you know, I don't know, a bag of apples that would rot away in that time, they can just go and drop it off there.
And both of those projects, am I right in saying they were both the sort of first of their kind in the UK?
That's correct. So both of them have then inspired quite a few other projects across the country. And the way we've approached this is not to say, look, this is how to run a community fridge and this is how to run a fridge, share library things, but we've put together toolkits that people can download to build on what we've learned. And now, for example, there's a community fridge network, a UK community fridge network, run by an organization in London, the Hubbub, and they're doing a fantastic job to have taken it to the next level. This year, they're starting up 50 community fridges across the country. And, you know, they've built on our toolkit, but then developed it further. And that's, I think, the, you know, the impact that we could have, because we are, in essence, a training organization and startup. So, and we want to innovate, we want to try things out, and then rolling it out bigger, making it bigger, we don't really have the resources to do, and we're not really good at that. So that's why we haven't pursued them, you know, grown it bigger than it is, or has been
improved. But it's one of the things I love is that you've done something new and innovative, and it's that kind of dropping a pebble into the pond, and then those ripples have spread, and you've not only impacted your community, which was one of your priorities, but now that's impacting on a much wider scale as well.
Yeah, that is really also at the heart of our theory of change, in a way, that we, that pebble dropping, it's a nice way of describing it. So we do that through the initiatives that we set up, but we also do that in working with people, you know, the people that come through our programs. So one of the, our students has set up the first food assembly in the UK, for example, in Chester, Katie. And, you know, food assembly is all over the UK now. We've got, you know, a recent student has just launched a farm cafe doing education work. So there's obviously the, you know, the impact that we have straight away with our students on our courses, but then our students have an impact as well. And that's how we hope we can grow that community and social enterprise sector in the UK.
Because it's a completely kind of win-win-win scenario, isn't it, in that you are providing training for these young people, you're providing the community with something that it needs, and giving these young people the skills to go out and create their own projects as well.
Yeah, exactly.
It's very clever.
Well, I think that's how we need to think, really. I think that's... I think that's where social enterprise needs to go. We need to find new win-win scenarios so we can provide, you know, value in a number of ways. You know, because everyone who runs a social enterprise knows how difficult it is to make it work financially. You know, and when we, you know, and so really practically, so we can raise money with, like deliver our courses in or raise money for our courses in multiple ways. So we can raise money through the students we are working with, either because they're disadvantaged and we can get funding, or they can raise money because to come on the course, and we can raise money with the work that we do with our students. So that enables us to finance what we do, and it's because we are providing value on multiple levels. So anyway, I think, you know, that that is a big challenge for social enterprise, to find new ways in which we can create value and do that in a win-win scenario.
And you mentioned that, you know, the theme, I don't know, that's probably too generic, but a lot of social enterprises do seem to struggle with the financial, to be financially sustainable. Why do you think that is?
No, that's a big question to ask. You know, and I want to, you know, make sure we are struggling financially as well, in the sense of, you know, each year it's, you know, we've grown a lot. Like for the first few years, our turnover has doubled, and that's quite a big thing to sustain. And the reason for it, I think it's, I think you can't really speak for a sector, the whole sector on it. It will depend entirely on, what you do, I think. I think in many ways, social enterprise will provide, you know, has like a competitive edge, really, on other businesses. So with our workspace, a lot of the people that come and hire space from us is because they like that we are a social enterprise and that they are supporting the work that we do. And then I think it becomes difficult where whatever the social aspect is of your work costs a lot of money, you know, and often, you know, it's like, oh, that idea of like, oh, we need to focus more on the commercial aspects of our work rather than the social aspect because that's what pays. I'm not quite sure whether that always works. I think for us, speaking personally, I think, yes, we do have to increase our trading income, but we also have to increase our, you know, our the social impact that we create and how we measure that and showcase that. So, and then raise funds against it. So
it's a fine line to balance, isn't it?
And I think one of the strengths of social enterprises is that we can, you know, draw in donations and grant funding and, you know, commercial income. So I hope that in the long term, that will help organizations, social enterprises to flourish.
And social enterprise is one of those terms that means something different to everybody. And because there isn't a, you know, a sort of legal definition of it, what does it mean to you?
So we actually don't really talk about social enterprise very much. I'm probably guided by the theme of your podcast more than how we talk about it in our organization. So we talk about community enterprise. And in the past, we have talked about social enterprise and we called our program an apprenticeship in social entrepreneurship. But we moved away from that and we call ourselves a school for community enterprise now because really thinking deeply about what is at the heart of what we do and the community is at the heart of what we do. This is where we are aiming to create impact and it's what we enables our work to do. So we often say we are run by and for the community here in Fruit. So community enterprise now has also varying definitions, but for us, it is really, it could be a social enterprise, you know, like Share or the fridge. It could be just somebody setting up a small local business as well. You know, I'm often sort of like to use the example of the local baker, you know, who technically wouldn't really be considered a social enterprise, but, you know, it provides a social service. You know, people come and they chat and they get their bread and, you know, it's such an essential service for the community here in Froome. And if it was gone and, you know, the only bread available is Sainsbury's, you know, that would be a real loss for the community. At the same time, we've got a lot of young people who, you know, like they like the idea of social enterprise, but actually they just want to set themselves up as self-employed and start some building. You know, and we want to be open to them as well. And I think social enterprise can be quite alienating as well sometimes. Where, you know, but having a business that serves somehow the community. I think it's much more tangible to understand and it can come in many ways.
And you can see the very visible impact of it. And why was it important to you when you set up Adventure that you did it around a trading model rather than as a charity?
So I think just in general, because it would enable us to diversify income. That's one thing. And the other thing is that if we teach about entrepreneurship, we need to be entrepreneurs. You know, and I've learned a lot through just doing it. And I can only authentically support other people setting up social enterprises and community enterprises when I can show that I've done that myself in a way. And it would also just keep us alert. It would keep us to recruit the right people. You know, we've got a staff changeover, so, you know, mentioned it earlier, and the changeover one of the things is that, oh, we needed somebody with an entrepreneurial spirit in this role rather than what we had recruited for. So there's something that, yeah, it keeps us, it keeps us to be entrepreneurs, and that helps us to support others.
Yeah, definitely. And this might be a bit like asking you who your favourite child is, but have you got a favourite project so far of all the things?
My favourite child. No, I can't really say, I think. I walk into our community hub and I'm so glad we've got this space and it looks the way it looks, and I can, you know, I've got so many memories here of different groups of students working and building things. And I think that's a powerful thing. So people walk into our space and it looks a little bit like how adventure is, you know. Mm-hmm. It is handmade, it is slightly industrial, it is creative. It is unique, and it is about working here, but also socializing.
Yeah.
And it is using recycled materials wherever, you know, we've bought very little. We've got this big greenhouse here in our office. So I really appreciate that when I kind of walk in.
The very first project that your first group of students had, was to create that community space?
Yes, it was. But we had that only in the second year. So the first year was more trialing things out, and we were in different spaces across town until we found this space and signed the lease for it.
Wow. And one of the other things that you've got up and running that was the latest project, wasn't it, is the workspace you've referred to a couple of times. And can you tell us a little bit about that project?
Yeah, so the Remakery in Froome. Mm-hmm. So we had an underutilized workshop space, we really wanted to make use of it in a much better way, mm-hmm. and to encourage more repairing and recycling and making. So our students worked on this concept of the Remakery that would enable other people to drop in, work on their projects, use shared tools and space, mm-hmm. Also for people to run classes in or workshops, and we would offer that as not as a fixed hired sort of charge, mm-hmm. but a profit share, so that it would make it really easy for people to set up workshops. It was one of the interesting dynamics that course. So the students, I think, had a really good learning experience, uh-huh. and with the project we didn't get as far as we wanted to.
Right.
It wasn't quite at the space where we could say, okay, it's finished, it can be launched, it has a solid business model behind it. Mm-hmm. And things are happening, that, you know, we've still got the men's shed in there. We've got a Friday session for young people, mm-hmm. and in the autumn we've got a series of workshops going, starting with basketry and building a boat out of plywood, and you know, like things like that.
Yeah.
But it didn't get to the place; it didn't build that community to take it on and fly with it, really, because we didn't get it to the state. Place where it went. And that's actually, you know, always kind of a difficulty really about our model, that we want to meet several outcomes at the same time.
Yes.
You know, we want to set up and launch an enterprise, mm-hmm. and we want to give students a really good experience. And then that particular course, the student needs required us actually to do less.
Yes.
That meant that we couldn't meet our other outcome of launching it. Now, in this case, it wasn't an issue because we got as far as we got, and it was, you know, and we can take it further now. But if that would have happened with a share shop, say, that would have been a real issue for us as an organization, because we're just taking on a shop and, you know, it's not ready to launch, but all the students are going, and, you know, that's it's always a risk and a challenge of the model that we have, really.
And do you find yourself tempted in that scenario to kind of step in and try and rescue it?
Yeah, so I do. And it depends on how urgent the outcome is.
Sure.
So the team does sometimes then in the end support the students in launching things and doing things mm-hmm. on the project as well. That is, you know, that's okay as yeah. long as it doesn't sort of go, you know, so because we are team members, you know, the way we facilitate it, we usually have two members of staff working with a team of students.
Yeah.
One is more focusing on the entrepreneurial side, so one is focusing more on the learning and development side uh-huh. of things for the students. And the person that works on the entrepreneurial side then often gets involved and works together with the team
yeah.
on the startup. So, yeah, that's important as well, I think, for them to have that encouragement and working alongside somebody as well.
Yes, definitely. Definitely.
Yeah.
And you said right at the very beginning that your whole sort of why is, and I love that phrase, to create a livelihood that matters. Do you feel like you're living that vision at the moment?
For myself or for people in our organization or?
For you.
For me, yes. So it's an interesting, I have been, and I could live really well on what I was earning, and I did work that really satisfied me and where I felt like I could have an impact on the world. I could use my skills and the things that I'm good at, you know, all things that are important for a livelihood that matters. And then, you know, before we started podcast, we talked about family, did a family catch up, and you know, suddenly I also have two kids to feed,
yes.
you know, and now needing to restructure the business that to support that, so that's the next step, and I hope we can make it,
yeah.
but again, that you know, so it's not finished. It's like, yeah, I've done it now,
yes.
you know, I've done it for a few years, and now I need to you know, put it simply, I need to earn more.
Yeah.
And so do other members of staff as well. And holidays. So we've been talking with the board quite a lot about, you know, the pay level that we can offer with our organization and the amount of holidays we can give people, and wanting to make it a more attractive place to work in that regards for the people who, you know, have families really. And yeah, so that's our next challenge coming up, really, to restructure the business in a sense that we can work more effectively, that we can earn more money with what we're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's on the agenda.
Yeah. Just that'll be what, 10:30 this, you know, 10:30 later on in the week, and then it'll be done and dusted.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what I expect.
Yeah. And what's the, you know, there are obviously lots of challenges that come with running an organisation like Edventure, but what's the best thing about what you do?
The best thing, I think I am a person who loves that stage, who loves initiative. I love when other people are inspired to take initiative.
Mm.
I love taking initiative myself and creating and innovating and making things happen. And I think that Edventure provides me the opportunity to do a lot of that and at the same time be in a stable organization as well, which has some perks, you know. I don't want to be an endless entrepreneur, you know, that always has that sort of half-done company, you know, and we are a very established organization. We've got our staff handbooks and policies and, you know, so we are established, but we're also creating new things all the time, and we're working with people that create new things all the time.
Yeah.
So that excites me personally. Then it's very local. You know, I live in a small town, but I can walk to work and, you know, within 10 minutes, and I can finish work early when I want and be with my family.
Yeah.
I've massively reduced my working hours in the last few months to be with my little baby girl, and having that freedom to do that while still doing something work-wise that I find meaningful is something that I'm very grateful for.
Yeah. And from, it might not feel like this to you, but from an outsider's perspective, I just love how you mentioned the innovation and that you love innovating these things. And it seems like you just very quietly go about making these amazing things happen and pushing these innovations and kind of, you know, not just changing Froome, but we've seen how these projects are spreading around the country and really changing the way people are thinking about things. And you just kind of quietly and very unassumingly get on and do it. Is that how it feels from your perspective as well?
I think the way change works is that, you know, it's very non-linear. We've been inspired by a lot of amazing people and initiatives around the world, mm-hmm. you know, and in fact, we've benefited so much from, you know, the people that build the road outside of our house. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone contributes, yeah. you know, whether it's a road builder or the innovator or, and we are in this incredibly privileged position to be able to take some of those threads of other people's imagination and work and craft it into something else and then let that flow into the world, uh-huh. you know? So we're just like that another generation who does, we do things and somebody else will pick it up and will do it differently and better, and it will build hopefully that kind of society that enables people to thrive and to build those livelihoods that matters to them.
Yeah.
I mean, so I think I see ourselves as like just a tiny step mm-hmm. in that big process of unfolding, of building society that has gone on for hundreds of years. I think I wouldn't call it unassuming. We are proud of what, I'm proud of what we do.
Yeah.
But I also see ourselves just as part, you know, a little part in the bigger picture.
Okay, so. Yeah, definitely. And one of the things that really strikes me about Edventure is that you're surrounded by this incredibly supportive community, not only the community sort of in the town, but there also is very much a sort of adventure community, isn't it? And people really actively want to help out and to be involved. Is that something that you've actively worked to encourage, or has it just happened organically?
I mean, that was one of the biggest pieces of work really in the beginning, to build that community. Mm-hmm. And the way we pitched it is really that we said to people here at various meetings and privately, and you know, is that we want to gather a community of people that will support the next generation of young people that build this town, mm-hmm. That contribute to this town. And there are a lot of professionals, a lot of people here in the town that are wanting to support young people, and they want to see good things happen in this town. And in a way, then building that network and building and creating opportunities for people to give in its essence, you know?
Yeah.
And we've done a lot of work that in the beginning. And then I think we've neglected that a little bit because we kind of had that network. And then, you know, we kind of realized that actually, oh, yeah, we need to feed this and do more of it and get more people involved again. So I think we did that well to varying degrees at different stages mm-hmm. of our organization.
And you've mentioned that at the moment you're in the middle of restructuring how the business works, but what's your sort of big vision for, I don't know, maybe the next 5 years?
There are a few strands to mm-hmm. this, and I think on the one hand, I want to develop our programs further. Mm-hmm. I want to try out new ways of delivering that kind of win-win scenario. Mm-hmm. I want to get our existing courses really clear and structured well so that they can be delivered in other places. And mm-hmm. we actually want to run a pilot next year of Edventure in another UK town.
Wow.
Preferably not a thriving town like Froome, but a town that has potentially more social need than Froome. And to try out what is it like to run this model in a town like this, really. So yeah, we've just had funding support from Unlimited to run that pilot, and then with that also to answer that question of like, how can we share our work, yes. work more with in the UK and beyond. So yeah, getting in a way, it's getting really good at what we're doing.
Yes.
I also want to. I really recognize more and more it's about the people, and I want to train more people to do this kind of work because that's how it lives on, really, rather than in a kind of toolkit that can be delivered by somebody. It is, people are the carriers of the work and the history and all of that. So I want to put a lot more attention on that. Then in Froome, we've got various business development projects, particularly working around our tiny house, the Ed Space.
Oh wow!
And growing that into a more commercial manufacturing business, and then our hub as well to make more investments and improvements, so we can earn more trading income with our workspace. In 5 years' time, if you'd ask me where do I want to be, I want to be predominantly here in Froome financed by trading income, profits from our various satellite enterprises. I want that the various initiatives continue to flourish in Froome and make a real impact on our community. I want that there's a much bigger team of people that can deliver this kind of work.
Yeah.
Not just the adventure course, but with that, recycling that into their own kind of work. I want to have had the space to really hone our courses and get them really clear and, a really solid business model behind them, all of those kind of things, as well as have had the opportunities for trialing other ways of doing our work, basically.
Yeah. It all sounds so exciting. I'm sat here, I don't know where you might be sat there thinking, oh my God, but I'm sat here like smiling. It just sounds amazing. It sounds so exciting. And just to see how, well, already what you've done already, but how you might develop that and continue to grow it is just amazing. And you're currently recruiting at the moment for the next set of students, or have you just finished?
We are still open. We're still recruiting. So we've recruited most of them, I think 7 of the 10, and we're still looking for 3 other students to come on board for the 4th of September.
Yeah. Okay. And because you said that they have some direction in terms of this is the kind of project we want you to
Okay.
What's the outcome for this set of students?
For the next one. Of course. So we've taken a little turn and are trying something else this time. The next team of students will work with the share shop again. And their challenge will be to find ways in which to make share financially sustainable, implementing a new trading arm or aspect of that work. And it will involve looking at the business, looking at the performance, looking at what's working well, and going through a design thinking process that helps the students to come up with ideas on how the shop can function better and generate more income. And then to implement some of those ideas. At the same time, we've got one already developed over time, and that's beside the community lending aspect of share, to add high value items onto the portfolio of what we can lend out, so that we can, not just have like a £4 donation for an item we lend out, but can, charge 70 quid for that glamping kit, which would financially make a massive difference. And I think we can maintain that sense of community lending initiative combining it with a more, you know, you could say a commercial hire shop. Hopefully that shift of business model would help us make Share financially sustainable, which still relies on grants and donations. Or at least 30% of the turnover needs to be generated through that at the moment.
Yeah.
And we hope that through after this course, Share will be fully sustainable in itself. That will be the challenge for the students. So it's not starting something up, but it's innovating within something existing.
And I really like that you're, because the temptation might be, I guess, to keep creating new things, and the things that you've already created might not actually be 100% there yet. So being able to say, hold on a minute, let's go back and revisit, probably did feel like quite a pivot, did it?
Yeah, that's, running two courses a year in Froom, starting up two new social enterprises a year is not feasible under the umbrella of our organization. Uh-huh. Once we've built some, in the next few years, some really strong social enterprises under our umbrella, so the EdSpace, Tiny House Building Company, plus Share Shop, plus our hub, we then want to start up initiatives for other non-for-profits in the town.
Yeah.
That don't run under our umbrella anymore, really, because we can't manage it well. Yeah. And I think we have much bigger impact and could provide a better student experience as well, working with further partners in the town and doing it for other organisations.
Brilliant. This has been absolutely fascinating and I could talk to you all day. I'm sure you're just back from holiday, so I'm sure you've got far more important things to be doing. But thank you so much for your time and sharing so much of your journey and your learnings and your values and things, because I think it's something, just that phrase that you said that's really stuck with me, creating a livelihood that matters, I think that will really, really resonate with a lot of people.
Yeah, thank you too. It was a great way of reconnecting to what we do after my holidays.
Reminding yourself,
Yeah, exactly. It was a good reminder for myself.
Brilliant. You've been listening to the Making Good podcast with me, Jen Gale. If you've enjoyed the show, I'd really love you to pop over to iTunes to leave a review and say nice things. I'd also love to hear your feedback and your thoughts, so do drop me a line on jen@jengale.co.uk or head over to my Making Good community on Facebook. Thanks for listening.